Hi, this is Frank Mentzer, and you're listening to the Great Save or Die podcast.
This podcast is under WildGeeksProductions.com and D20Radio.com. You burst through the door, you find a small room filled with golden jewels and a red dragon. He starts to breathe. Save or die!
Welcome to the Save or Die podcast, a podcast about classic Dungeons and Dragons. If it's in a box, we'll talk about it.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Save or Die podcast, adventure number 34. That's right, number 34. We're back from a little hiatus, taking a little break as some people went to conventions and I had some studying to do. And anyway, if you're listening for the first time, I'm DM Vincent, one of your hosts here for the Save or Die podcast, the original Dungeons & Dragons, classic Dungeons & Dragons podcast, along with my faithful co-host, DM Glenn.
Oh, hi. I had to switch my brain over. It's the other show. Thank you. Hi. I'm here.
And as usual, DM Crispy, who's become the star of late with being on almost every show.
I'm on everyone's podcast.
What a weasel.
Yeah. So, Crispy, what have you been up to with this week since I last talked to you?
Nothing.
Didn't you have a Pathfinder game to do?
Didn't I have what?
Pathfinder game you were going to?
I did. I had that night before last. It went good. We killed some plants. Pretty much it. It was a very short session. It was only like a couple hours. And then we watched the gamers too, because we had people in our group who's never actually seen them.
Wow.
Is your Castle Amber game on hiatus?
I don't know what's going on with that. Like, it's hard to get a hold of everyone. Like, people have been flaking. I want to run them, but, like, it's getting to be kind of a bit of a problem.
Okay. Oh, really? Sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
It's life keeps getting in the way, so.
Yeah, well, you can't blame life.
Yeah. Well, Vince knows about that. What you been doing, Vince?
Well, studying, as took a little week off. I was trying to get myself certified for Microsoft, which I actually did do, so that's done and over with.
And, so Microsoft? I thought it was for Cisco.
No, Microsoft. I went the other route.
Oh, okay.
I went the more exclusive round of Microsoft.
Yes. don't get him started.
I know. And I've actually been reading the Leverage RPG book by Margaret Weiss Productions, which it's interesting. Interesting mechanics, that game.
Is that based on the TV show?
Yeah, based on the TV show.
Whoa. Margaret Weiss. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Cortex role-playing game.
Is Leverage even like a... Like, I can see like Firefly and, you know, Smallville and like Supernatural, but Leverage? I've never seen Leverage, but it doesn't seem like... It doesn't seem like a game or a series that I would want to play a role-playing game of.
Well, basically, you've never seen Leverage the show?
I haven't. I know that...
Timothy Hutton's in it.
No. What's his face? From Angel. Lindsay.
Yeah.
Lindsay's in it.
Christian Kane, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's, like, you know, this badass hitter guy. Basically, the whole premise of Leverage is that people get screwed in life, and they come to Timothy Hutton, and his team gets revenge.
It's kind of a corporate A-team thing.
Yeah, pretty much.
So it's like Nega Shadowrun.
Yeah. And they do all this stuff to, like, embarrass the guy or get even with the guy or something like that.
Yeah.
Right, I can see that being a pretty
cost of a lot of money, and, you know, kind of thing.
I've noticed mostly people take these games and they just kind of, like, use the concepts of the games and make up their own stuff. They don't really follow the TV show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then again, SSI did do a Dallas role-playing game at one time.
Dallas role-playing game?
Yes, it's... Yeah.
Why?
I just read, I think it was on Gregnardi and stuff, a review of the Dallas role-playing game. Yeah, that was my question. Why?
Turns out the mechanics are just really good.
Yeah, I guess so. He said it basically came off to come out like one of those party games, like how to host a murder type thing. No, everybody's not killing JR all the time, but it's more like a how to host a murder game, he said. So.
Is Patrick Duffy there?
No.
Oh.
I mean, he wasn't in the game. Yeah, well, yeah, his character was. Now you're confusing me, Vince.
All right, let's head into our first segment of the night.
Don't you want to know what I was doing?
I'm just kidding. Yeah, we want to know. We want to know all about the North Texas RPG. Come on, come on, Glenn. Tell us all about it. People are dying to know.
Well, I was there. I pretty much shot my wad on that in Thaco's Hammer. But I'll do a recap here. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Nobody listens to Thaco's Hammer.
What?
Nothing.
Nobody listens to Thaco's Hammer.
Yeah. Yeah, nobody does.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. But I met Mike and Liz for the first time. Very, yay, very cool. And got some BX gaming in.
Yeah.
Vince. Yeah. The first game I got in was Bad Mike running B1. Or B2, excuse me. No, it was B1. And I had a hell of a good time for that there. I met all my role-playing heroes. They all signed my Deities and Demigods book, and I got a lot of swag.
So you can confirm that there is two different Mikes, Bad Mike and Good Mike.
Yes, they were both at that con, and there is no way you can mistake one for the other. Bad Mike is chubby. But
so now, like, your copy of Deities and Demigods is, like, worth $1 million. Because
Yes.
Most of the creative team.
And everybody that was alive that was at that con.
It was signed by
James Ward, Errol Otis, Robert Kuntz, Jeff D., and Paul Jacques. And on the dedication page, Frank Metzer put his scrawl on there.
Nice.
Plus having him sign my little encyclopedia and other things. And I tried really hard not to be a pest to Paul Jacques, but it turned out he had to sign about four things of mine. So had an Aliens game going on that looked like a lot of fun with the big old, you know, they had it all laid out and everything and, you know, all those aliens and stuff. That was
aliens,
fun.
Aliens, like Xenomorphs aliens?
Like the movie.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah.
I didn't know that existed.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they had a big old giant dungeon-type thing set there, and people run around getting killed. All these people playing games, I did not play in one of their games. Hmm. The closest I got was Jeff D's V&V game.
Oh, I love V&V.
And I got bumped for Mike and Liz, because they had signed up and I hadn't. Hmm. Also got the limited edition miniature they had there, the Lord of the Great Plains, which is a Minotaur, wearing a loincloth with the logo of the con on there and rattlesnakes below.
Cool.
One of these is going out to Corey because he's had such a rough week.
Aww. Yeah.
And also, I mean, I got some Rolite stuff. I actually got a copy of the World of Greyhawk, the box set, the reprint without the box.
Cool.
And you know, just a good time was had by all, and Becky actually enjoyed herself. Funniest conversation I had there was with Tim Kask.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
When I first got there, we were waiting for the room. I get introduced by Bad Mike. Tim Kask, this is Glenn and Becky. And he says, oh, you guys got to do that that Save or Die show, the Thaco's Hammer. He says, yes, we do. He says, are you going to do a show from here? And I said, no, I didn't bring my equipment. Good. Okay, cross him off the list.
Well, it's good that he knows that the two shows are out there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And Frank Metzer had some really nice things to say about Save or Die, too.
What did he say?
In fact, I didn't see it here, but I saw it on the ACM. He said, some guy quoted the Metzer interview that we did.
Yeah.
And he said, I'm sorry I didn't need to bring that up on your message board. He says, no, bring it up any time. Save or Die is worth listening to.
Aw.
Well, that's very nice. Thank you, Frank.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, and I've been just going through the swag, and that's about it.
What'd you get for swag-wise?
I got a bunch of four Rolaids books from... I bought, like, half of Rob Kuntz's Rolaids books. I got the whole Fez series of modules. He had it right there, shrink-wrapped.
Wow.
Got Vornheim. Did not get Lamentations of the Flame Princess, but we're going to be dealing with that later. At the last day of the con, I picked up a Tome of Magic and a Monstrous Man. I was looking through them. The guy goes, like those? Yeah. Take them. What? Take them. I don't want to take them home with me. Okay, fine. So now I got a monstrous manual to tell my magic, which we're probably going to give away on my show.
Nice.
Sweet. Yeah. But and speaking of which, we got a contest. We got all the entries in, right?
All the entries are in. We're right now sitting around. What is it?
Reading and
studying them. It's very hard, right? Just to pick one grand winner because all these entries are really amazing. So.
Yes, they're really good. And thank you, everybody, for sending something in. We are now fixed for the rest of the year for Sonar. No, I mean we're going to look through them. And the game will go out within, the month, the end of the month?
I was actually, we have to just really decide. We have to all get together and decide, because I've picked my favorite so far, Glenn's picked his, Crispy's picked his. Now we just got to get together and all decide out of our favorites which match.
And yeah, we just throw them all in a bucket, and, the one that lands close to the bucket, that's the one that wins.
I was going to say set them on fire, whichever one's left over wins.
Hey, that works. If we printed them out on fireproof paper, you're a lock.
Yes.
So,
I was actually surprised at how many people entered for the contest. I was thinking maybe like 2 or 3, but
yeah, it was like 8 or 10.
No, I thought it was more than that, Glenn. More like in the upper teens.
I'll have to go look. I'll go look again in the inbox. But I'm pretty sure it was. Well, yeah, but well, that's great. That's great that people are listening.
That's right.
And if your name says Metzer or anybody like that on there, sorry, you're disqualified.
I don't think they'll be entering for it.
No, I don't think so either. But anyway, yeah, we will be getting to that and look in the next week or two for some kind of announcement for like winners and stuff.
And no, Crispy, you can't win.
Yeah, I was thinking about like having my roommate enter in.
Roommates are disqualified too.
You wouldn't know.
I know your roommate.
This is a good plan.
Now I know his roommate too.
I think you wouldn't be able to get away with it. The address that says Las Vegas on it. So
yeah,
there could be other people in Las Vegas who listen to the show
with the name Tim.
I would fake name. I would just have my dad write it in.
Oh, and one more thing that I did this week, I got a physical copy of Ultimate Toolbox.
Great book.
This is a glorious book. We've got to do sometime do a segment on this book.
I've spoken about it many times, but yeah, we should probably do a whole review on it.
Yeah, maybe in a week or two or something. Okay, what else we got, Vince?
I think that's about it. Why don't we just head into Game On?
Okay.
Game On this week. We got...
That was a great intro.
I know, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So good.
We got dice. Okay.
Gamers love their dice.
Why do we love our dice so much?
Well, I have a couple of theories, but I threw those out the window. I'm just saying, we just like to roll them and they're pretty.
Well, without the dice, you couldn't have the game.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I do enjoy rolling dice.
And it also that's the random factor in the game. That's the main random factor right there in the game. Mm-hmm. So, of course, you know, gamers are going to be at least a little obsessed with dice.
I agree. The more dice you have, the better it is because you have more choices.
Mm-hmm. I've got a giant Crown Royal bag. I put a pound of dice in, and I keep thinking, got to buy another pound. Just
I know.
Not enough.
I usually go on Amazon, and I go pick that pound of dice from ChessX.
Yeah, that's what I did.
You'd grab that every once in a while and just get some good dice out of that, and then...
Yeah, because you know you're going to lose them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You go to very many games, you're going to lose them. Plus, I have grandkids around here who like to play with them. Mm-hmm. Even though I bought them their own dice bag and dice at the con, still, they want to play with my big old dice that are so many colors. And like I said, it's the random factor, and you know people are going to get superstitious about dice.
Yeah. People do.
It's a given. I've seen, I could tell you about the things I've seen people do with dice, but I don't want to.
I have a good example. It was talked about on RFI, but they did a review of The Dungeon Masters. Was that the name of it? That documentary?
Yes, we did.
Where the guy takes his dice, and he's telling you like what you should do with bad dice who don't behave. So you dip them in water, and you stick them in the freezer for about an hour. Then you go outside, and you take all your other dice and line them up so they can, like a firing squad, so they can see the other dice, and then you smash it with a hammer.
Ooh.
And see that? Stories of
that could have been you.
Burying their dice in the backyard when they don't roll well.
Thus is why I wanted my money back after watching 10 minutes of that video.
Really?
You watched it for free on the internet.
I know, I still want my money back.
I want my time back.
I want my bandwidth back.
Yeah. Seriously, I watched that for 10 minutes and I was like, this is ridiculous, this is embarrassing.
Yeah, I did not like that movie at all. Like, I felt really bad because some of the guys seemed like really good people, but everyone just shot so negatively. But that's another topic for another time.
And that one douchebag guy killing his whole entire party because he didn't like... because they were arguing over gold.
Yeah, like... It was just... It's not a good documentary for people who were in the hobby.
Is that the British documentary?
No, it was...
No, it's an American.
It was filmed in over time over via Gen Con...
Yeah, I remember seeing the Gygax interviews in there, and...
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I know the one you're talking about.
In case you're wondering out there listening, just go to Google and Google the Dungeon Masters movie, and you can bring you right to a link on YouTube for it.
Yeah, it's also on Hulu in its entirety, with ads, but, you know, you're watching it for free.
Now, here's... Hey, let me tell you a story about some dice. One time I had a girlfriend who was a Wiccan, and I sort of dabbled in it myself when I was with her and stuff like that. She taught me about things she talked about keying stones, things like that, aligning them with your energy and all that kind of, filling them with your energy. Mm-hmm. And we were playing D&D, and she said, pay it. She would call me pay it. She was from Georgia. And she wanted to use one of my dice to roll.
Wait, pay it? How does that mean, Glenn?
Pet.
You're like, oh, okay.
Pet,
but she's from Georgia.
It's Georgia.
So super pay thick it. Southern accent. All right.
Well, anyway, she grabbed the dice, the D20 I was using, and clasped it in her hands and started concentrating. And I immediately said, give me that! Don't you dare!
Yeah, I have a couple friends who have told me about that as well. And, like, whenever they get new dice... they don't roll well because I am not superstitious at all. So, like, if I sound like I'm talking down about dice superstitions, please don't get offended. I am, but that's because I think it's all silly.
Uh-huh.
I think it's silly too. I don't really believe in dice superstition. If the dice is rolling bad, it's just because I'm rolling bad. I'll just pick up another die. I don't care.
They're generating random numbers.
Yeah, which is their job.
Yeah.
Like, I have a story, like, in my former group, one of the players always had a dice that he always rolled a lot of 20s on.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And I remember one time he was in the game, he was rolling, and it was, like, rolling ones and low numbers, and he started getting pissed. And it's the same guy that slammed his fist on the table, but anyway.
Yeah.
He was starting to get pissed, and he's like, who touched my dice? And he started screaming at everyone at the table. He goes, I bet you all touched my dice. And he picked up his dice and he left because he was all mad.
Yeah. Like, so that, I was actually going to ask, are either of, like, so Vince isn't, like, are any of you guys, do you have little quirks and superstitions?
No.
Like me, if a dice is rolling consistently low, I'll switch it out. I have two D20s. So, okay, this dice is, you know, generating low numbers. It's a silly thing. It is a superstition, but I don't think it's as bad as, like, no one else can touch my dice. I give dice away. Like, here, take them. In fact, I just gave two new players sets of dice, so now I gotta go buy more.
I just like certain dice based upon, like, if it's a cool color or it feels cool.
Yeah, like,
or...
I have a set of Seashell White Precision Game Science dice that I bought, and I inked them myself. So, like, that's my set that I use, because, you know, I put work into them, and they look really cool. And I have my favorite D20, it's pink and gold. That dice, like, it does roll pretty consistently high, and it will kill
so sweet.
By
it sounds so sweet.
Yeah.
I've got the pounded dice, and I told you the story about how I recently lost my dice bag for some reason the minute I got this other bag. So I bought the pounded dice, but I'd do that again. I love looking at like what I'm going to – I never know what I'm going to get, and I always get some interesting dice in there.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm never disappointed with something like that. And it's like, I've got some pretty cool ones right now. I can't think of anything right now. I've actually got a, what is it, 12-sided die? I think it was a 12-sided die with pips on it.
Oh, cool.
I've never seen that before.
That's pretty cool.
I was like, wow, I wish I had a whole set of these.
Yeah.
This would be cool.
I'll go through my dice and I'll just pick dice based on how they feel. Let's just, oh, this one feels good today. Let's roll it.
Yeah, it's like, it's going to roll a random number between 1 and whatever the face of the die is, but like...
Yeah. I mean I'm... Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, like, I'm not super superstitious and like... but I like the look of them. Like, I how the dice looks, like what color it is and stuff, that usually is why I choose them. Like, mm-hmm. I couldn't buy the pounded dice because I'd be afraid that I would get stupid-looking dice... And I would just
that's the chance
thing of dice I would never use. Yeah,
and also
so I like going to the game store and like picking them up and looking at them and also what colors they have
for us older people. One dice that we can read.
Yeah,
I liked. I'm about ready to. As soon as I get some more money, I'm about ready to go out and buy the game store and buy another set of those gigantic dice because I like those because I can read them.
Oh, that's right, Glenn. You went to the free RPG day today, didn't you?
Yeah, and they didn't have anything.
Yeah, that's today.
Oh, that's right, okay. Yeah, today.
Yeah, they were too busy trying to conduct their magic tournament.
Oh,
yeah, so it's like, I just looked to see what they had left. But, yeah, they have some really, they have those giant dice that I really like. I used to have a set of them. That went the way of my other dice bag or something. But it's, I loved them because I can go, oh, wow, I can see the 20.
Yeah, from across the room.
From across the room. This is cool. And then there's
the... Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and then there's Corey's infamous resin-like D20 the size of a softball he likes to throw at people who aren't listening.
I have a couple of those gigantic oversized D20s.
I have one with some weird weird glyphs on it that I got from the RPGA.
Mm-hmm.
In this player packs, it's one of the thank you things. And it's like, I don't know what this is, but I'm hanging on to this.
Yeah, Paizo makes a lot of... Well, there's a company, I'm not sure which one, they make a lot of dice like that for Pathfinder, or they're like really artsy-fartsy, intricate-like
designs. Yeah, I've seen websites for like those really fancy, fancy dice. Yeah.
They're really cool looking, but they look really hard to read.
They are hard to read.
Yeah.
I had a friend of mine who bought a bunch of those, like the elf writing dice and everything.
Yeah.
It's just too hard to read them.
Yeah.
Now, the one Vince and I slobber over is the one on ThinkGeek where the 20 lights up.
Yeah.
I kind of do want one of those.
It's awesome looking, yeah.
Yeah.
And they said they did it in a way where it didn't weight the dice.
I don't know about that, but...
Lest they say. I think it used one of those, like, little hearing aid batteries in there or something.
You guys have the big, giant beach ball D20?
Or they make furry D20s, like plush D20s.
How about odd dice? You guys got any, like, D30s? Or
I have a D100 that I paid $10 for at a game store just because I wanted one.
Oh, the golf ball?
Yeah. I love that thing.
I have one of those.
It takes forever to stop rolling, though.
Yeah, and then it's like, it stops rolling. Everybody leans over the table. Is it a 36?
Yeah, it's a pain to read.
I think that's the one that's up.
I have
dice. Yeah, it's a little hard to read.
I have a 2 6-sided dice with 2 6-sided dice inside of it.
Oh, I love those.
I've seen those, yeah.
I saw a whole set of those at the convention. They had like a 10-sided, a 12-sided, and they all had the little dice in there. I wanted the set of the 10 because you can actually roll percentile real easy that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I was also told by many people that they're not fair dice, they're cheater dice.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of people call them cheater dice.
Hmm.
I don't
have to remember that.
I like them, but everyone's like, oh, they're cheater dice.
Now, there's a game system out there, some kind of retroclode or something like that, I can't remember which one it is, that uses all odd dice, like a D7.
That's probably the Dungeon Crawl Classics RPG.
Yeah, DCC.
Yeah, I was really looking forward to that. I have some DCC 3.5 modules, and what bugged the crap out of me when I had them is when you want to generate random encounters, you need to use a D14 or D16. I'm like, I don't have this, so I actually talked about this on Twitter for anyone who follows me probably remembers. I was looking at the DCC RPG a couple weeks ago, like right when it first came out.
Right.
And, you know, it says, oh, you're going to need the D75, D3, D16, and D24 and D30.
Why?
And I'm just like, screw you, game, Goodman Games. Stop trying to make me use your crappy game science niche dice. Like, no other game uses this. And there's, I don't see any, like, aside from novelty, I really don't see the point in having a D30.
Like, so
no other game uses
that. So Goodman Games pretty much pushed it out so they could sell their product.
So they could sell, because they're like, partnered with Game Science, because, you know, they
But I've also seen people, like, swear by a D30, and they love it. You know, maybe they have the charge, maybe not, but it's like, well, I just don't see the attraction, really.
That's, yeah, I don't know. I'm a little annoyed about that by Goodman Games. I like them a lot, now to hear that.
The DCC RPG is very weird. Like, I think we should, since it's not necessarily a retro clone, but is a retro-flavored game, I think we should talk about it. But it is very, very too much old school in a bad way. Like, it's very draconian. You do it this way, or else.
They lost me when they had Ascending Armor class in there. I read that, and I put the book down. That's it.
Ascending Armor? What? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they lost me with character 3-5. Creation.
Really?
Yeah, like, when they're like, you roll 3d6 in order, always. You don't ever roll any... You don't ever roll 4 and drop the lowest, and
that's the first
you don't
thing I
arrange
ignored.
Them. And I'm just like, nope. See ya.
Well, that's how they did it in Basic originally.
Yeah, but, like, anyone I've ever talked to doesn't do it that way. Like, even if you're still playing Basic, I have never met a single person who makes you roll 3d6 in order.
Yeah.
Like, 4d6 as kind of just, from everyone I've talked to, just become the norm.
Now, I know the dorm.
Yeah.
I know Chessex sells blank dice, too.
Yeah.
Yes, you can write your own dice.
Yeah, you can ink your own. Mm-hmm. Have you guys ever done that?
Yes.
I have not.
I mean, that would be fun.
I did one for the Phases of the Sun and the Phases of the Moon.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I have a D8 that has, it's like pre-made, but it's got weather patterns.
Uh-huh.
So you can roll to check for the weather, which is really cool.
Nice. And now they're coming out with these dungeon geomorph dice.
Yes,
roll up your dungeon. I like that.
I want one of those because I used to have a die like that. It was a 12-sided, but I left it at a friend's house and I've never gotten it back.
I want a set of those. I mean, I couldn't get it on the ground floor because I didn't have any money, but you know, if they come out, I'll find some and buy a set.
Yeah. What was it? What do they do?
Dyson Logos.
Dyson Logos is associated with it.
Who's a good guy? He's on Reddit with me. I see him on RPG.
I read his blog all the time.
Yeah, so do I.
Yeah, he does maps and stuff, and he made these geomorphs for this company who's selling them and putting them on dice. So you could, like, roll up a dungeon.
They're really cool.
You know, you take, like, 5 of them and roll them. So, oh, okay, here's a room, here's a room, here's a corner, here's da-da-da-da-da. And they're really, really cool. There, we did a plug. Hey. Now, what about people who cheat on dice?
Oh, you mean the guys who take two identical dice and they put one so the face that they don't want is on bottom in the microwave for 10 seconds?
I've never heard of that one.
I never heard of
it
either.
Basically, I read about it on the Spooning Ones forums or something like that. Or
really?
Might have been Giant in the Playground. Basically, what you do is you buy two of the same die.
Yeah.
And you take one of them and you put it with the, like, say it's a D20. You take the, one and you put it face down, and you microwave the die for about 10 seconds. And what it does is it melts the plastic just enough to where it doesn't deform the die, but it weights it onto the one, so the one will you won't roll once.
Oh.
And you roll that. You know, anytime you need to, like, really save yourself, and anytime you get accused of cheating, you take the other die, and you give it to them, and then they roll it.
Oh, well, excuse me, I'll be right back. I gotta use the microwave. I've shaved dice before just to see if you could do it, but I never used them in a game. You ever shaved dice?
No, I've had friends put dice in the dryer before.
That would probably be pretty similar to the microwave thing.
But I don't see how that would really... That would just even everything out, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, like, it's a weird thing to do. They probably thought it would, like, work for their favor, but it probably wouldn't. I personally can't stand people who, like, cheat.
And then I had the people in my former group that had the 3 20-sided dice.
Yeah, it's like, why are you cheating at pretend? That is what you're doing.
Yeah, because I couldn't believe it. I was DMing one night, and he's like 20. I'm like, okay. Then a couple, like, maybe 10 minutes later, 20. I'm like, all right. Then, like, a couple times later, 20, 20. I'm like, dude, all right, that's a little too much luck of a 20.
Yeah.
And then he went to the bathroom, and I grabbed his dice, and I saw the 3 20s on. I'm like, that son of a bitch.
I think if you cheat at D&D, you're just the worst person ever.
I mean, just because it isn't Vegas doesn't mean that you're going to be tolerated for that kind of stuff.
Yeah. No, I got mad at him for that. I was like, dude, why are you cheating in a pretend game?
Exactly. Yeah.
You can't want to win that bad.
He's also the same guy that got pissed because people touch his dice, and he gets pissed because he dies.
That's probably why he got so mad. Yeah,
because he's like,
people are going to see that I'm cheating.
Yeah.
Yeah, so of course he's going to get all bent out of shape and slam the table or whatever.
Yeah, and especially when he dies. He's like, he gets all mad and grumpy and everything. He starts to almost cry. I'm like, dude, come on, it's just a game.
That's I remember Corey told a story like that, where, like, he specifically messes with that guy at his table. Which I think is funny.
He wants to get angry.
You guys, like, I still have my first set of dice.
Uh-huh.
Do you guys still have your original dice? And they're all intact.
Oh, hell no.
No, mine are long gone and lost in moves.
Mm-hmm. And I was one of those people who had the official TSR dice with the crayon.
Nice. My friend Joe has the second edition TSR dice bag from the basic set.
The Joe?
And I want to kill him and take it from him.
The Joe?
No, not the Joe DM. Just a Joe DM.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there was a DM screen I saw at the con I'm lusting after, and I can't find it anywhere. So
what is it?
Anyway, it's that one that came with the Adventure Escape from Thunder Rift. The one, the big black one says, Dungeons and Dragons in black on the front.
I don't think I've seen this one.
Because I know I have AC2, which is a DM screen, who has an adventure in it called The Treasure of the Hideous One.
No, that's not it. This was for they put that out for during the Thunder Rift stuff to get you ready for the RC.
Oh.
It had all the charts and everything for basic, for Metzer basic in there. And on the front it was just this black, and it just had the logo scroll like Gone with the Wind scrawled across the front of the thing, Dungeons and Dragons Challenger series. And somebody used that at the con. I thought
that's right, the Challenger series. That's right. Okay.
Yes, and it's like, man, where can I get? I want that. That is so cool. Yeah, but anyway, yeah, dice. There are many, many, and it's the weirdest one I saw was a guy who put them in his mouth and spit them out on the table.
Yeah.
It's like, do that again, you're gone.
Pretty weird. Well, as long as you don't touch his dice, it's okay. Like,
yeah.
And if he has a designated spitting area.
Yeah, people screw with him all the time. He comes back and they all have mouths full of dice. What are you talking about? What happened to my dice? Oh, there's one. Anyway. Dice. We want to hear about dice. I know you guys got dice stories. You can tell it to us, can't you?
Maybe.
At where? SaverDie@gmail.com. And I got it right.
Our voicemail. It's SaverDiePodcast@gmail.com.
You're right. SaverDiePodcast@gmail.com. What's the voicemail?
570-290-7283.
And of course, osrgaming.org. Okay, for that, get that place.
I'm on there all the time, so.
osrgaming.org. That's our new forums. That's where everyone goes. I think I found your Dungeon Master screen, Glenn.
You did. Brian found it, but it was sold out.
I found it on Amazon.
Ah.
Okay. The Challengers, Dungeons & Dragons screen, and it's black. It has a picture of a dragon on it.
Yeah, $99.99.
$38.37 for a used. New is $79.90.
Yowzer.
It's pretty expensive cardboard.
Yeah.
I think I'll be looking for that when I'm in California. Used bookstores, all that kind of stuff, you know. But shall we move on?
Yes, let's head into our next segment of the night.
Nope. Sorry.
What?
Nope, you're wrong. Look it up.
I don't have to look it up. It's common knowledge.
Nope. No, no, no.
Okay, for the Fiat.
Where are we? Where are we?
The Fiat.
We're in the Fiat.
This week we're talking about weight and encumbrance.
Had to do that.
Yeah, for Julie, huh?
It's Julie buzzing me. Weight and encumbrance. How do you deal with it in your game? Do you deal with it in your game? I should say.
I like Holmes D&D, I actually don't really worry about it too much.
Really?
Yeah, I kind of eyeball it, but I'm not an exact kind of, I'm not exact about it.
Uh-huh.
Well, so, if you're...
go ahead.
If you're wearing plate mail and carrying, like, a bastard sword, and, you know, like, a pack full of gold, yeah, you're going to be moving it, like, 90. You're going to have move 90, or actually, probably even 60. But, you know, if you've got a reasonable amount of stuff, and you've only got, like, a 6 strength, I kind of hand-wave it.
Well, to me, aside from Monty Hall dungeons... That's the kind of rule you'll whip on them when they get really ridiculous with the treasure.
Exactly. That's what I reserve it for. And
we're
like,
taking everything in the room and the four-poster bed. You know?
Yeah, all right. Well, it's going to take you 8 hours to get out of the dungeon.
Yeah. You know, you pack it in for the night and stay overnight. And you know.
Just keep rolling wandering monsters.
I'll do that as far as when gold and items and everything. And I love doing it when people are like, oh, I collect this bag and that bag. I'm okay, fine. And as you're moving along, it's like then they go to battle. And it's just like, how are you going to fight? You're holding 2 bags of gold.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That's when they drop the 2 bags of gold, and the kobolds from the other side come and take the 2 bags of gold.
And I love the fact when the battle's over, they all forget to pick up the bags, and they assume
yes!
And they assume it's still with them.
Yes.
I think Crispy did that himself in one of my adventures.
I think I did do that, actually.
Yes.
I had like a bag full of copper or something like that. I actually just left it. Like, I didn't even put it back with, like, party gold or anything.
Yeah.
Have you ever had parties that want to take, like, a mule or something down there just for that?
Mm-hmm. I had this guy in one of my campaigns that was, like, doing the discount furniture Bob's Outlet Store.
Yeah.
And he brought, like, a cart with a mule, and he was taking all the furniture, and he was bringing it back to the village trying to sell it at a discount price.
Crazy Eddie.
Yeah.
I've learned the hard way that if you're going to put something worth value in there, your players are going to take it.
Yeah.
Like, I set up, like, this room where there were what could have very well been statues that would come to life. We can actually talk about this in the next segment. And they were all holding flaming swords. Well, they would have been flaming, but the world was built so, like, magic was sealed away. It's a very fun campaign. Right. But so one of the players, like, they failed their check to, like, know what was going on. And they told this super elaborate story about how, like, these golems would come to life and they protect this treasure and blah, blah, blah. And the other character, the other player character, was just like, nah. And he started hacking away at the arms and took all the swords.
Wow.
Yeah. Which for me would have been, you know, 10 long swords. That's, you know, 30 to 40 pounds.
Yeah, that's weight right there.
Yeah, I didn't even think about it.
Unless it's magical where it doesn't weigh, you know, like an elven sword or something where it's, oh, this is light. But how often do you run across
those? They were gigantic swords as well. So it would have actually been somewhere around like 80 to 100 pounds worth of stuff.
Something like a giant wield.
Yes. So that's, keep that in, like I say, I hand wave encumbrance, but keep something like that in mind next time. I know I should have.
Well, I'm looking at Metzer right now at the movement rates and encumbrance table. You can go up to 400 units, whatever, however the hell they measure it here, and you can still go 120 feet per turn.
Yeah, you're just moving really slow, that's all.
Yeah, well, even that, 120 is a modest clip.
You know, 120 per turn?
Yeah.
That's
120 feet per turn in a dungeon. Yeah.
That's normal. That's like the unencumbered in Labyrinthford.
Yeah. So you can go up to 400. Was it CN? I forget what that is.
Coin weight. Basically 400 coins.
And yeah, 400. Every coin,
that's actually something I do want to ask you guys about, is how you handle coin weight. But so you can hold up to 400 coin weight, which is... crap, I can't even math right now.
And you know what? You can run at 122 at that point, up to 400.
Well, coin weight, I usually consider, when I think of coins, I think of normal size, everyday, modern day coins.
Like a quarter?
Yeah, like a quarter size. I always think of gold pieces as like a quarter size.
Me too.
That's what they got changed to. But in basic D&D, they're actually the size of about a half dollar.
All right, half dollar. That's still close enough, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think it's 10 coins is a pound or something like that in basic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really? Yeah, I don't remember that. I usually just think of a whole bag as like a whole bag of coins. I've felt a whole bag of coins working in a bank before, so I just could, you know, look at it that way.
Yeah, and I mean, it's heavy, but like, it's not I don't think it's as heavy as rules as written.
Right.
It's not more of a heavy thing, it's more of an encumbrance thing of trying to hold that while do everything else.
Yeah.
Encumbrance also entails not only the weight, but the...
the encumbrance. Like,
awkwardness. I mean, trying to take, say, a statue out of a dungeon. It may not weigh all that much, but it sure is going to slow you down because it's awkward to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, trying to make those corners with that Michelangelo's David in your hand. Go ahead.
Whoops, something fell off.
Oh, there goes the damn...
Glenn.
Yeah, the fig leaf. The fig leaf.
Thank you, Glenn.
Okay. Well,
Gotta keep that, you know, those innuendos down, Glenn.
Oh, yeah, really. We're shooting for that family friend. We're shooting for that family rating.
Yes, yeah. Older gentleman in the back.
The older gentleman in the back who cusses all the time. Ha, ha, ha.
That's the younger gentleman who cusses all the time. I'm trying to be good about it.
Yeah. Shut the hell up, you young...
Whippersnapper.
My version is... Yeah.
Never once.
First time for everything.
I'm sorry, but never once did I ever say this show was a family-friendly podcast.
Yeah, I think you're going to say that at least once per show, though.
Yeah.
Anyway, encumbrance. I don't think you should really whip this on a party unless they, like I said, get ridiculous with the treasure.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's reasonable that, like, a fighter with 16 strength can walk around in plate mail carrying a two-handed sword and a shield and a backpack full of, like, rope.
I mean,
16 strength, the guy can just flat lift 160 pounds, no problem.
And I think of it also, if you're a fighter walking around with all this plate mail on and everything, if you learned how to use it, you're used to it because you've been putting it on every day. Not like you just
put
it on.
That's another thing about it, yeah.
You're not just like your character went poof out of like the air and just put a suit on for the first time. He's like thud on the ground. And
yeah.
Like that's the...
Your muscles build up, you know.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing about like what different armors and weapons that like character classes can use. Like a wizard... You know, he spent all his time in training, learning how to cast spells and, like, bend the rules of reality to conform to his will. And a thief sneaks around. So they're not used to wearing plate mail. That's why they can't use it.
Yeah.
But, like,
and they're the ones that want to take the treasure the most.
Yeah. And a fighter, you know, he, you know, went to war, he was a mercenary, or whatever your backstory is. He's trained with these armors, you know, this... 1 week it was, here's banded mail. Now you're going to learn how to work in banded mail, and then he worked his way up.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then, you know, I'm not going to say it goes all out the window if they have bags of holding, but that does have to go into the equation.
That makes it
somewhere.
Problematic, yeah. Like, I think if you have a bag of holding, and do bags of holding have a set
yes
amount?
Yes,
okay, yeah. You got to track that in the bag of holding. You got to track how much, like.
But over, but yeah, but it, up until that coin weight, it doesn't weigh anything.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
Until
but
you get that limit, and a lot of people will go, "Oh well, I got three bags of holding. I'll just get like half the dragon hoard today, and come back and get the other half tomorrow." You know, that kind
of
thing.
I'll put the rest in the bank. You know.
Yeah. That bothers me a little bit, like people having multiple bags of holding on them. Because mm-hmm. I think of bags of holding as something really rare.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be something just like, oh, I have five of them on my pouch. And
I think of that, like, about magic items just in general.
I actually got a bag of holding in my second BX game at the convention, and I asked the guy if it could be a helm of holding. He thought it was so wonderful. So, yeah, sure. Because Lojack carries around a helm of holding. In the middle of the battle, it's like everybody's like, stick it in his helm. Okay. I put on the helm, and it's just, you're reaching near the limit. And so it's like, I'm trying to fight a zombie standing like with my back crouched because I start to feel the weight on my head.
Isn't like your head going to go into the helm and be sucked in because it's in the helm?
That's I never thought of that. Of course, that'd be a real problem if it was accidentally a helm of devouring. But
I was just gonna bring up the helm of devouring.
Yes,
that would be the best trick.
Don't do that. Actually, all my characters in the Lumpers have hats or helms of holding, and they have a trigger word to let stuff out of the bag of the helm or the hat.
I could see if it was just a normal bag of holding, like it's or a normal helm, I guess, or hat. It's fitted to, like, not go all the way over your head. So,
yeah.
Like, I can see it still being...
But what I'm saying, you can put stuff in there. It'll stay there until you say the word. Mm-hmm. You know, turn it over and say the word, and it comes out. Or reach in there and say the word, or whatever. That was a plot point at the end. We got rid of a knoll that way, because I had a heavy anchor chain in there as evidence for something else. And we got captured, and he says... And you know he's looking in the hat, and I say the trigger word, and boom, this heavy chain comes right on down his head, that kind of thing.
Cool.
So, yeah, bags of holding can make it real. I mean, there are, you know, three bags of holding and a donkey, you can get a lot of stuff out.
Like, I think that's the reason why I think encumbrance is important, especially in, you know, classic D&D, because, like, you're getting a lot of treasure. It's more treasure than AD&D.
Yeah.
But I think part of the balancing factor of that for advancing is that, like, they can't carry it all.
Why do you think there's more treasure in basic than advanced?
The treasure tables, I've just always thought they throw more treasure at you. Not like there is more magic items or anything.
I've never
like
noticed that. That's why I'm questioning, because I've never really noticed that.
Yeah, I think, like, Mike brings it up all the time. I know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when we were going through the B series, he picked out a lot of modules where it's like, boy, that's a lot of treasure.
Yeah, that's another thing. And modules, because I've brought it up before in Thorky's adventure. Like, I'm like, this is a lot
Altanus,
of magic items.
Yeah. Altanus. Yes. That was a lot of magic items. Mm-hmm. Even I would cut back on that. And then there's, Queen's Harvest, where the guy's just basically forcing, like, a rod of healing on you and stuff like that.
Yeah, Castle Emperor, if you beat the first encounter, you get an extra 10,000 GP.
Yeah. And let's not forget, all that stuff is worth experience, too.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
At least in basic.
So, like,
so that makes them want to say stuff.
Well, like, that's the thing about encumbrance being important, is, like, that's worth experience. So if they can get out with all the treasure, they're going to be leveling pretty fast.
Well, I don't really do item experience like that.
You don't?
No, because you can't really, unless you sell it. In my opinion, you don't do it. Because, like, you can't, it's hard to do that. Like, if you have a sword plus one, and they say it's worth, I don't know, 100 experience points. How do you know how long are you going to have that sword for? And then when the sword goes away, you're going to lose the 100 experience points?
Yeah. Like, I personally don't do experience points for magic items, just gold.
No, if you sell it for the gold, then I will give you the experience for it.
Right. Yeah. Or if I find a magic sword in a dungeon, I found it, I get the EEP. If something happens where it gets destroyed, to, say, two games down the road, then I still have the EEP because I found it.
Yeah. I would say if you put it in your bank, then maybe, yeah.
Glenn has a point, though. Like, if you spend, like, if you earn, if you get gold and then you spend it, like, you don't lose that experience. Like, I know a lot of DMs do you only get
the
experience once you spend it.
The way Vince does, you do, though, because you have to put it in a safe place. Good luck.
Yeah, that's fine, yeah.
Oh, yeah, if you find gold and by the time the adventure's over, the gold is gone, you don't get the experience for it. No.
Well, no, I mean, not during the adventure, no.
No.
But you're saying you take it into town, put it in a CD or a bank or something, then you hand out the experience.
Yeah, I'll hand it out that way, yeah.
Yeah, but I can understand that. But I mean, like two adventures later, if the banker runs off with all your money, and closes the bank, you still got the EEP.
Oh yeah, you would still have it once it's given out.
Yeah, I'm not going to say, well, he took all your money, you deduct 500 EEP. You know, no. He went to the trouble to get it. He gets it.
No, at that point you have it. Yeah, you're right.
You did the work. You get it. That's the whole thing about experience is it's work. Everything. Okay. I mean, you get it for monsters, you get it for treasure, you get it for, I don't know, breathing hard or something like that. Ooh. But you're doing something for it.
Okay.
That's the concept I'm seeing there.
Well, why don't we ask the people out there what they do?
That's a good idea. How about that?
Yeah.
SaveDiePodcast@gmail.com.
Write us, call us, smoke us, whatever you have to do.
Smoke Vince.
Yeah. Glenn.
Yeah.
Let's head into random encounters.
You got a dirty mind.
We take what we want and leave the rest. Just like your salad bar.
Nothing up must leave. Presto!
You will come up no more.
What? Huh? What'll come out no more?
Random encounters.
And random encounters this week, older gentleman in the back, what do we have?
Random encounters this week, the living statue.
Which is kind of a cool thing, mm-hmm. because basically you've seen those like Indiana Jones movies and those little cheesy movies on the side that they walk into these
Harryhausen movies.
Yeah, the statues are just standing there like, oh, it's just a statue room. And all of a sudden the statue's like chasing after you and everything. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah, it is. Now, of course, you've got to differentiate that from say a stone gargoyle
or a golem
or a stone golem.
Yeah.
Or something like
basically,
that.
Basically, the living statue is an enchanted animated creature made by a powerful wizard. That's the difference.
Right. It's more enchanted to the will of the creator.
Yeah, there's no intelligence about it. It's just there to pretty much do whatever the wizard wants. All right, you're here to protect this crown. If anyone comes near it, attack.
Right.
Yeah, right. This
and it first makes its appearance where?
I have it in the Moldvay BX rules.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at. I did not see it in Labyrinth Lord, but...
It's in the Metzer box sets, but strangely, it's not in the RC Rule Cyclopedia, but they put it back into the creature catalog, which I who knows why they did that.
Right, which we'll review in the creature catalog a little bit later.
Yeah, but that's where they put the living statue. And what do we got? We've got... In Metzer, we have a jade, rock, or ooze, silver, and steel living statues.
Oh.
How about BX?
Crystal, iron, and rock.
Yeah, they only give. They do say that a DM can make up any type they want.
Right.
In the description, a DM may manufacture whatever type of substance they want for their living statue.
Right.
It's
almost like a golem. You can.
Yeah, tell me about the ooze one, because that sounds kind of interesting.
Well, it says here, these resemble normal rock living statues, but they have the ability to conceal themselves by merging into the surface of a rock wall, floor, or ceiling. They are resistant to magic, and so make all saving throws as fifth-level dwarves. In place of hot magma, rock ooze statues are filled with gray ooze and can squirt two blobs of ooze per round from their fingertips, AC-8. Hit die 1/2, 4 point damage, 2d4 a round.
So this automatic thing makes gray ooze.
Plus that, plus this, it dissolves metal.
Yeah.
It saves as a first level fighter.
That is a nasty monster.
Well, the rock one in the Molve is living rocks that have an outer crust of stone but are filled with hot magma. Yeah, and they do 2d6 points. Yeah, almost similar. They'll squirt magma from their fingertips doing 2d6 points of damage per hit.
Right.
So it's pretty similar to the ooze.
Right. The jade one is interesting because that's more of a, an eastern thing. It makes saving throws as a 10th level fighter, immune to non-magical weapons, and even magical weapons confer no bonuses to attack or damage rolls when used against them. And when destroyed, they crumble into powder. So you don't even get the jade, which is going to really frustrate a lot of the PCs. Hmm. Oh, it went to powder. It's worth nothing. What?
And they have a crystal one that just pretty much...
Really? What's that one called?
The crystal one is basically the basic. Like, it doesn't really have any special powers. It's the weakest of the three in Molde.
Yeah,
it basically just a living crystal statue.
Yeah, 1d6 damage it does, and saves the fighter level 3, and that's about it. It's armor class of 4, it's pretty simple.
It is almost fearless, though.
Now, the toughest one here in the creature catalog is the steel living statue.
Ooh.
These things are immune to non-magical iron or steel weapons, and any iron or steel weapon striking the steel statue automatically becomes stuck in it. And the following round, the weapon is absorbed by the statue, which gains 1d4 plus 1 hit points up to the maximum of 40.
Yeah,
magical weapons are unaffected by the statue's absorption power, so do standard damage. So it's
that's very similar to the iron one.
Yeah, I'm looking at
The iron one gets a saving. You get a saving throw versus spells.
But this is automatic. If it's you have to hit it with magical weapons.
I wouldn't want to fight one of those.
No, I wouldn't either.
No. You guys use them?
Yeah.
Have you ever used them?
I have, yep.
Back with my story, I should have used them, because the statues there were just set dressing. You know, kind of like remnants from the kingdom beforehand, and when they took those statues, I should have just had them come to life and kill them.
Oh, yeah. So what do you use it for, Vince?
Like I said, I had used it to actually protect a crown that was in this dungeon.
That's right.
I had these statues standing around in the background, and the party didn't think anything of it, and they went over and saw this crown on a pedestal, and they're like, oh, there's nothing around. And they did the whole Indiana Jones thing, looked around, and compared it with the weight and everything with a sack, thinking the stone was going to come rolling out. But as soon as the thief picked up the crown, they started hearing that grinding sound, and all of a sudden they see the statues come crashing down off the pedestals and coming towards them with this spear in their hand. So,
whoa, and now, a weapon.
was the statue of Asmodeus that we fought in the Book of Sorrows? Was that a living statue?
The second one was.
Second one was
the one that came out of the fire.
Yeah, I remember that one.
That one was a living statue. Yeah.
Wow.
The first one that you beat the crap out of, that was just...
It was just a statue.
Yeah, that Trask was pretty much, jumping on or whatever he was doing.
Good times.
But this is the kind of monster you could use for your standard repertoire down in a dungeon or a temple, or especially for temples.
Mm-hmm.
Works great for guardians.
Oh, yeah.
If that, anybody ever seen the Mummy movies and stuff like that, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Perfect monster to put in a place that you know you're never going to have to feed or pay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, how can we make this more interesting, though?
Fire out of its butt.
No! Out of his nose. No. So how could we make it more interesting? Well, the steel one, that's going to be a hard act to follow.
That's pretty good, yeah. I was thinking making it have multiple arms, like a Shiva statue or something like that.
Oh, yeah, the jade one. That's the way I see the jade one.
It's got four arms, which means four attacks.
Have either of you ever seen the movie Thief of Baghdad?
Yeah.
No.
Remember the mechanical Shiva-type toy?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That he wanted to embrace from it, embraced the Sultan, and she took these needles and just killed him? To me, that's like a living statue. I think of that when I think of a jade statue.
I would probably, to make more interesting, the crystal one, I would definitely do this like second chance type thing. Like, you destroy it, it goes poof down, and you think it's gone, and then like it reforms back in another round. Like the liquid, like a liquid Terminator type thing.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. T-1000.
Yes.
Just to do something different, maybe have it reformed.
Well, actually, we've got in the book here. I got a silver one, so that could do that.
What's the silver?
The silver.
One.
Yeah, that sounds
silver living statue. Yeah, they're much smaller than normal statues, about a foot high. Have a thick skin, of pure silver. Value 50 gold piece when it's killed. They're not harmed by non-magical weapons and non-magical fire. Only take half damage from edged weapons. But you could make a man-sized or larger one out of silver.
Mm-hmm. It runs really
fast. And just
treat
it like liquid metal.
For the rock one, I have an idea. Vince is going to hate me. But there's an episode of Doctor Who.
Oh, crispy.
Where they fight these things called... Well, not fight, but there's this thing called the Blinking Angels. And basically what it is they're statues, but they're only that way when something is looking at them. Basically, if you look at them, they get locked into statue form anytime they're being observed. So what happens is when you look away, they're super, super fast, and they can touch you and transport you to any point in time. And that's how they kill you. They basically take you out of, like, your time period. And put you in another time period to live out the rest of your days.
I keep thinking of the little ghosts in the Super Mario games.
Kind of. Yeah, it's like that, except...
Don't turn your back!
It's very much like a Boo.
Those ghosts are annoying.
Yeah. They are very annoying. But let's see, what else can we do? Give them flight?
No. Mm-hmm. I don't know about flight.
Why not?
Well, it's a statue.
Yeah.
Like a gargoyle. Cause
what if it's outside?
Like a gargoyle, it's left up to the DM, but like with a living statue, it is a statue. It's
right. Could you give them spell-like abilities?
No, because they're not intelligent, so I wouldn't.
Okay, yeah. I thought that was maybe like the creator programmed a certain thing to happen when you know, a certain spell to go off. When
I guess you could.
Yeah, but it'd be more of a programming a computer thing. Okay, when somebody touches the rock over there, shoot a fireball at him, and he gives he has it preloaded or something like that.
You could give him magic weapons like a flaming sword, like that's pretty cool. Like I would like to fight that.
Like as soon as he steps down, the sword goes poof, lights up.
Yeah, it catches on fire and like it rushes at you.
Like he's got a giant flame tongue.
Mm-hmm. And like they're pretty well. Like the crystal one is pretty fast. It's move 90, so 30 in combat.
Whoa.
Yeah, but the iron is only 30, and the rock is 60.
Silver's got you beat 120.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty fast, but it's tiny.
Liquid metal.
It also has a bite.
A bite.
Yeah, the silver one has a bite.
Really?
2d4. So it's not a little bite.
That is a bite that will kill a first level fighter.
Yeah, it's like, you better roll low.
Yeah.
If you want to stick around. Go ahead, what, Vince?
I was going to say, well, we've given you guys ideas out there. Why don't you give us ideas how to use this?
Yeah, that'd be very, very cool. Right, living statue, you find them in BX, and the... second creature catalog, the second printing of the creature catalog. And give us a saverdiepodcast at gmail.com.
570-290-7283.
Operators are standing by, I think. Unless they went home.
I think they went home.
Yeah.
They leave after 5.
Yeah.
And then osrgaming.org.
Yes, them too. And they leave after 5. they're there all the time.
Yes. Let's get into Prize of Your Imagination.
Your dungeon master has placed you in a dreadfully precarious position.
Where are the Cheetos?
They're right next to you.
Well, all you do is we play the characters we talked about earlier when we run around and stuff.
I want to show you a trick Mother showed me when you weren't around.
Use your lightning bolt.
Victory is yours.
I'm attacking the darkness.
Dungeons & Dragons games. Products of your imagination.
You're not there. You're getting drunk.
The products of your imagination this week.
Nothing comes out. Up my head.
I was thinking something else, but okay.
I know. That's why I qualified it.
Anyway, what do we have, Crispy, what do we have this week?
We got AC9, the Creature Catalog.
We also have DMR2, the Creature Catalog.
What?
What?
A reprint. Yes.
AC9 is stock number 9173. The reprint is stock number 9438.
Cool.
And this is one of those... this is one of those things, like, I call these the Fiend Folio of Basic.
Well, yeah, it's probably about the closest thing they had to it.
Because, yeah. Well, first of all, it was done by the Brits in 86. The first one was done in 86.
Okay, so Fiend Folio was, I think, out already.
Yeah. These are basically, what they did was compiled all the creatures from the basic modules up to that point. And added a few more.
Which is a smart idea.
Yes.
Because there's some really good creatures in a lot of the modules that should be in a book.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, that's what Monster Manual 2 was.
Yes, well, yes.
For ADD, yeah.
Yeah.
They got Mike Steamweevils in here. And, all kinds of things. And what's interesting is the way the thing... the way the books are laid out, or at least the first book is laid out, it's not laid out alphabetically. It's labeled. It's organized by type, like animals, mundane, extinct, and giant, conjurations, humanoids, low life, monsters, and undead.
And guys, in conjurations, I'm actually in that section right now.
Are you?
Living statue is there.
Oh,
silver, right, rock, or ooze, jade, and steel.
Whoa. You're kidding. Wait a minute.
No, I'm not kidding. It is page 28.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, if you're on a PDF, it's page 29.
You're right, it isn't. Doggone it, I just in the last segment, it wasn't in this one. You're right.
There's a lot of really cool stuff in here.
Yeah, because it's in the other one, but I didn't find it in this one. So, my bad, sorry. Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of my favorites, and the reprint was basically reprinted when it started going into the real cyclopedia. Mm-hmm. And they added even more monsters in there. One of the favorite ones I see people use is the Gray Philosopher.
The Gray Philosopher.
What's that in?
That's in both of them.
No, I mean, what section is that in?
I'll tell you in a minute here. Talk about, as you're fond to say, talk amongst yourselves.
Well, I like the Creature Catalog because it has all the monsters in there that, you know, you don't normally use. And if you just want to throw it up or mix it up in your group, this is perfect. Mm-hmm. This is when you got those rules lawyers and those grogs are like, oh, it's a kobold. He has approximately this many hit points, and this is his AC. And, oh, it's an orc. We know him exactly. So you throw, like, the blah blah at him from the blah blah blah, and they won't know because they're not used to it.
Right. And these are the kind of guys who, like, have, like, all the box sets sitting in front of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that it's got some of the stuff from modules. Like, it's got Megan in there, and you guys, the thing that Brian boxed in the X2 game was a Megan.
Really? Oh.
That's pretty cool to see that in there again, yeah.
Well,
it's got a lot of really cool monsters.
Yes, I can't find it in the original copy, but I know where it is in here, in the reprint. Gray Philosopher is basically a cleric who died with some important philosophical deliberations unresolved in his or her mind. Hmm. It's an undead spirit. And in its undead state, the philosopher does nothing but ponder these weighty matters on a chair, sitting in a chair there. However, it seems always unable to reach a conclusion. Over the centuries, the evil notions of the philosopher take on substance and gain a will of their own. These animated thoughts, known as malices, appear in small, luminous, translucent wisps with vaguely human faces, gaping maws, and spindly clawed hands. They fly through the air, constantly searching for victims on which they vent their prey, their petty but eternal spite. So, the Gray Philosopher doesn't do anything to you, but these things do. He's totally oblivious to you.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Like, that's
I've seen many people go, yeah, we use this as, like, the bottom, you know, the final guy in the dungeon, you know. They had to fight him, and he gave him a boon or something like that. But it's like, it's always a great role-playing. This one is a great role-playing opportunity. Hmm. Don't remember where it first came from, but it's really, really good. They got other things in here, like the Hukatan.
Yeah, the Hukatan are kind of cool-looking. They also have the Rakasta, which are they appear in like the first two X modules. I know for a fact they're cat people. This
is where you first saw the Hook Horror, which managed to land in the Fiend Folio for 1E. One of my favorite ludicrous things, the Juggernaut.
Juggernaut Punch. Oh, wrong game.
Yeah. I'm the Juggernaut! Yeah.
The RNA. And it's got a lot of stuff that I've seen come back from into, like, Pathfinder. Like, they've brought back a lot of this old stuff, like the RNA and Mongrel Men and stuff like that.
And there's somebody on Dragonsfoot had an article where they were compiling what's the difference between the two editions and what they have in and what they left out. And there was quite a few they left out from the first to the second. And I don't know who was doing that, but he had a nice little index in there. And it just, like I said, like Vince says, it's something to, it's like I said, it's like the Fiend Folio. It's used for a change-up.
Yeah.
You know, you got that big book in front of you? Well, it ain't going to do you any good. Because that is weird. Oh, an earthquake beetle. It's this beetle with the head of a calf. That is just, every time I don't think D&D can get any weirder, I see something like that.
So, Creature Catalog, how are we going to rate this week?
I will give it a 5 dragons.
I'm giving it a 5 dragons too.
Muy, muy useful.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with a 5 as well, because I like the fact that it's different monsters combined into one book, and it's not the normal thing, and it's something to throw your group off.
One thing I really like about this is the art is just so consistently good. Like,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's really, really good old school art.
One thing, and there's a Rakasta. Set the gun. One thing I missed from the reprint that the first one is the way they. I mean, I'm not too crazy about the way they laid it out, is like environments and habitats and stuff. But I love the faceplates.
Yeah, those are really cool.
They're just beautiful. These line drawings, animals, mundane, extinct, and giant. They just did this like forest of like different animals. It's just absolutely beautiful. I missed that for the reprint. I wish they would have done something like that. And they've had some really good artists work on this. Let's see. Cover art, Jeff Easley for the reprint. Interior art, Jeff Anderson, Helen Harrisford, Gary Herod, Tom Snell, Brian Williams, Jeff Wingate, Pete Young, and Dave Smithens. In the original, they had some British artists. And Jeff Anderson, Helen Briefer, Harry Harrell's team, Tim Sell, Brian Williams, Jeff Wingate, and Pete Young. So they had a lot of people put a lot of things. They're not your normal TSR artists.
No.
For the most part. I mean, yeah, we have an Easley cover on them, but that's about it.
Okay.
So what do you say? You said you give it 5 too?
Yeah, it looks like we're all giving it a big solid 5 here. I recommend it because I like it simple. Reach over, grab, pick up, flip the page, boom, monster.
Yeah. And you could flip through this thing for days and go, I need something to build an adventure around. Oh, look, there's a Hulker. Okay, fine, we'll build it around Hulkers.
I just, like I said, I love it, especially the fact that it's not the normal monsters that everybody sees in the book, and they're not going to be used to it, so it's something different.
Right. So if you find one of them, it's even, you know, you don't have to find both of them, but at least one of them, it's way useful in your game.
Yeah, Amazon, you can get it for, looks like it's $6 and $27. So, it's not super expensive. I think it's something worth having.
Yeah, and it's just a little nitpicky thing. The first edition is Creature Catalog with the UE, and the second one is Catalog with just the OG. So that's how I kind of tell the difference.
Oh, okay.
And these, the first one retailed for $12, and the second one retailed for $15. So, find them, half price books, thrift store books, wherever you can. Use bookstores, use game stores. You'll find them. They're kind of common, if you know what I mean. And of course, Amazon and eBay if you want to play those prices.
Yes.
And so that leaves us with a 5.
Total. 5 out of 5.
5 out of 5.
Is probably that the highest rated?
Well, you can't really count it because most of the reviews were doing modules. They're not doing just...
That's true.
Right. DM. I call this like a DM aid, so...
I have no problem with the DM, with, reviewing DM aids, because there's a lot of them are really, really
useful. I have no problem either. I wouldn't classify in the same category as the modules, so...
Well, let me put it this way, folks. With either all the Metzer books or the RC and the Creature Catalog... that's your complete D&D set right there.
Yeah.
That's it.
Well, minus the RC, but anyway.
Don't need nothing else.
Maybe minus the RC, right, Glenn?
No speaking English, no ticket debate. Sorry.
All right. So now it's time to grab...
Remember what Frank Metzer said.
Shush. Time to grab our backpacks and head down that lonely highway of broken tears. As this week, Glenn is running away from a crystal living statue.
Oh, great. You throw the crystal one at me. Well, yeah, but Crispy's down the road there trying to pull his sword out of the steel one.
Now I'm piling as much treasure as I can into my three bags of holding.
Oh, my God. And a donkey.
And a donkey. It's a donkey holding. Yeah. You don't want to know how. I don't want to know
where you put the treasure.
Yeah. Anyway, can you make the save or die podcast? Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night. Good night, everybody.
If you have any comments, please email saveordiepodcast@gmail.com or visit saveordie at saveordie.info. Follow the cast on Facebook / saveordiepodcast or follow them on Twitter @theevildm.